Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 216.
This week on the podcast, we interview Jill Stein, the real one.
Plus, the nation is shocked, shocked, shocked by a completely in-character, wildly misogynistic Trump conversation from 2005.
And Hillary Clinton wins the presidential debate using a daring mix of showing up and standing next to Donald Trump.
In the worst-timed bombshell ever, WikiLeaks releases the Clinton speeches just in time for them to suddenly seem comparatively non-controversial and tame.
And Tim Kaine and Mike Pence have the most cliched white man debate in history, collectively spending 90 minutes aggressively interrupting a woman.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
That's right. This has been an exciting week.
This has been an exciting week, and specifically for us, because coming up in a little bit on the podcast, we have Brain Trust Live's interview with presidential candidate for the Green Party, Jill Stein.
That's the real one. Yes.
This is not a fake
there.
Jill Stein.
In the flesh.
We met her in the flesh.
There's photographic evidence.
We're going to post that for sure on our Instagram.
Yeah.
So stay tuned for that. Before we begin, obviously, the presidential debate of number two has just finished, and we want to dive into that first.
Yeah.
To begin with, we want to set the scene a little.
Yeah.
Because
quickly, because
this has been a crazy week.
You know the scene. If you are alive in the world, not living underground in a bunker somewhere,
right,
you know what has been leading up to the debate in the last 48 hours.
And that is the Friday leak of audio of Donald Trump talking to Billy Bush about Nancy O'Dell in some pretty lewd language. He says some horrifying things that you've definitely heard. The most confounding is that he talks about grabbing her by the pussy.
Which I think anatomically can't actually happen, right?
I mean, it would be a lot of work. It would be tough.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure that he's up to the job with his little fingers, you know?
So true.
So true.
Yeah.
But he also said, I moved on her like a bitch, but I couldn't get there. And she was married.
Yeah.
Then all of a sudden I see her. She's now got these big phony tits and everything.
Yeah.
She's totally changed her look. Billy Bush is like egging him on the whole time.
Yeah. He doesn't say, it'll be interesting to see what happens with Billy Bush, because he doesn't say anything himself terrible, but is very clearly a willing participant and is like happy to be having this conversation.
He mimics Donald Trump a few times during this part of the conversation.
Yeah.
And then also, you know, Trump... The sort of context of the grab him by the pussy comment, which was the most remembered comment of this, is, yeah, that's her with the gold. I better use some Tic Tacs just in case I start kissing her. You know, I'm automatically attracted to beautiful. I just start kissing him. It's like a magnet. Just kiss. I don't even wait. And when you're a star, they let you do it. You can do anything. That's, by the way, sexual assault.
That's right.
Billy Bush goes, whatever you want. And Trump goes, grab him by the pussy. You can do anything.
That's it.
So apparently if you're a celebrity, even if you're a disgusting celebrity, women... would like you to sexually assault them.
That's right.
In the words of Donald Trump.
Yeah. Well, and don't you want Donald Trump to grab your pussy?
I mean, it's all I've ever dreamed of. My whole life, as I saw him as a failing businessman going bankrupt again and again.
And kiss him without permission. Get him to kiss me without permission?
Yeah, it just sounds...
At least he'll have nice breath, apparently.
What a dream come true. Yeah, at least he's using Tic Tacs.
Yeah.
But you know what, guys? That's not enough.
Nope.
Tic Tacs don't make it worth you sexually assaulting a woman. That doesn't give you permission.
No, it doesn't.
And what locker rooms does he hang out in?
I know.
Grab him by the pussy?
Well, that's what, you know, he...
None of them.
He had this apology that was sort of a fairly half-hearted apology.
Yeah.
And also just sort of, like, made it seem like because it was, you know, in 2005 that he was just, like, a young...
I know.
You know, just, like, a young person in a locker room who would...
The comments were from over 10 years ago.
He was 59.
He was 59 10 years ago, Donald Trump.
And also, you've never had locker room talk because
never
you've
once.
Never been in a locker room. Golf locker room does not count.
Also, he's not an athlete.
That's what I know.
Yeah.
Exactly.
But I mean, he's like not like socially a person who is like around people and like not, there's not a sport out there that, a golf locker room is a genteel locker
it's
room.
It's not a locker room.
Where people don't say anything to each other because they're too busy putting on expensive golf attire.
Yeah.
In any case, he also makes a joke about Gerald Ford.
Mm-hmm.
Like not
sort
tripping like Gerald Ford. I was like, really?
Like having that information.
But you know why he knows that? Because SNL popularized that image.
There you go.
So it's not, he didn't read that in a newspaper, you guys. He saw the SNL skit back
related
in the 70s.
Related SNL note, Alec Baldwin is just like ruling the world playing Donald Trump in both of these two episodes,
he looks like
the
non-cartoon Donald Trump.
Yeah, well, and he's cartooning it up.
Yeah, well, and that's once you dress him up in cartoon attire, he becomes Donald Trump. It makes sense. It makes so much sense.
Yeah, he's great.
Also, the best part of this clip is when Donald Trump knocks on the bus door as if that someone
comes
from
out
the outside can open it. And you hear someone in the background go,
handle.
It's a handle.
He's never used a door before.
He doesn't know how to operate car and bus doors. So he's just standing. There's video of him because the audio is hot mics and they're on this bus. And then there's this video of him standing trapped in the bus. Because knocking on the door.
Use the door handle to get out. God, he's so good.
What an idiot. Such a dream. So in any case, this for some reason was the moment. It was a straw that broke the camel's back.
I mean, and I get it on some level because, like, we actually heard him saying it and it was, like, a fairly scandalous conversation. But, like, this...
We've heard him say things like this
before. I was
going to
say, this is the conversation that all of Earth
knows
he is having.
He's made comments in public before that are almost as aggressive, right. That are almost as demeaning, that are almost as awful. He didn't use the colorful... grab them by the pussy line because that's a made up thing he made up on the spot in this comment. Yeah.
But like any of these Republicans who are about to list for you right now who thought that he might be incapable of saying something like this all need to look themselves in the mirror because they might be mentally stunted because obviously this is what he is saying in private.
Exactly.
You don't have to be a smart person to know.
They're genteel misogynists. Well, we talk about genteel racism a lot on this podcast.
Yeah.
They have been this whole time acting appalled as if this is an affront to everything they believe about racism, about racism being acceptable. And yet they propose policy all the time that is overtly racist. They like to be genteel misogynists. They want to ban abortion for the health of women.
Yeah.
You know, that's what these people are. And so this kind of commentary is not pro-family values. It can't be spun that way.
No.
And so it's suddenly like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
They caught me.
Yep.
So in any case, we're going to read a partial list of the endorsements that have been pulled.
We just picked out the names of people that we thought that you might recognize because this is probably half of the names. Yeah. It might be less than half of the names because the list is long.
If Christy Whitman...
I know.
Pulled her endorsement.
Yeah.
Christy Whitman was okay sending children into the burning rubble of Lower Manhattan after 9/11 and lying to them about it, but she cannot stand for being grabbed by the pussy.
Sure.
The Senator Mike Crapo of Idaho, whose name remains Crapo no matter how hard he tries.
Yep.
The Governor of South Dakota, Dennis DeGaarde. Carly Fiorina.
Yep.
Joe Heck.
Oh, and these are people who have... Who say he should step down.
Right.
We're going to read a few separate lists of some say that he stepped down. Some never endorsed him. Some endorsed him and rescinded their endorsement.
Yeah.
But whatever. These are the people who just want him off the ticket entirely.
They want him off the ticket.
Yeah.
Senator Cory Gardner of Colorado.
Yep.
Representative Mia Love of Utah. John Huntsman.
Yep.
John Thune, the senator from South Dakota. Yep. Dan Sullivan, the senator from Alaska. Yep. As well as Lisa Murkowski, the other senator
from
Alaska.
The Alaska delegation.
They're
Good
not
work,
kidding.
Them.
Well, remember, Murkowski is a wild card anyway.
Right.
She fucking won on a write-in.
All of the Republican... senators have denounced him.
Yeah.
Women senators have denounced him. Joni Ernst is the only one who hasn't said that
she won't be voting for him. Right?
Yeah, which is like, do better. It's
she
a fellow
can't.
Iowan.
She can't.
I know.
She can't.
I know. Every once in a while, I hope that she's trying, but she's
not. No.
I know. Yeah.
Shelley Moore Capito, West Virginia, Deb Fisher of Nebraska. These are all senators, female senators.
Yeah.
Condoleezza Rice.
Right, and she has been like radio silent throughout this
the
entire
Bushes haven't been
election.
Radio silent, but Condoleezza Rice.
Condoleezza Rice. This is basically like her first like entrance into the political fray. Yeah.
George Pataki.
Sure.
Hugh Hewitt,
who didn't ever like Trump.
No.
And was sort of begrudgingly supporting Trump. So this is probably
finally
wasn't
the moment he's been waiting for.
Exactly,
but also Hugh Hewitt talks like this with his friends, I have no doubt. So like this is curious.
Yeah.
These are people who aren't going to vote for Trump now.
Right.
We have Gary Herbert, the governor of Utah.
Yep.
Jason Chaffetz, the Utah senator. Kelly Ayotte, New Hampshire senator. The Governor Bentley from Alabama. Governor Sandoval of Nevada. John McCain of Arizona.
John Kasich, who was basically like, I told you so, like in his statement that he released.
Tim Pawlenty, former governor of Minnesota.
Yep.
Arnold Schwarzenegger. Thanks,
yes.
Arnold. Rob Portman, senator from Ohio.
And then... Oh, yeah.
A few Republicans who never endorsed and want him to step down now, but they are...
We're basically never Trumpers.
Never Trumpers
anyway.
To begin with.
But
Mark Kirk of Illinois and Ben Sasse of Nebraska, I'm not as surprised as to hear Mike Lee, in the flesh is just as idiotic as Donald Trump.
Yeah, and he's a
he's
big
like an
Tea
actual,
Partier. Like,
he's
an
a
awful
Tea Partier
person.
Dumb person.
Yeah.
I have dealt with him.
I think
in
it was because
dealings.
He was so all in for Ted Cruz. Also, there's rumors that Ted Cruz might be rescinding, which is sort of sad for Ted Cruz because he just endorsed last week.
I know.
He did the sort of Rick Santorum endorsement too. It was a late night Friday endorsement. Yeah.
Yeah.
But you know, part of the reason why we read this list to you is because you know, it's to say I told you so
to all of these people.
We have been telling you that this was going to happen. We didn't necessarily know it was going to be tied to a moment like this.
No.
But a lot of the people on this list, we have been telling you, were probably going to rescind their endorsement.
As soon as they won their primaries.
Because they were just trying to get through their primaries. Yeah. Specifically John McCain, who has never liked Donald Trump, but was also had a primary from his right. We assumed that Kelly Ayotte, as a woman who was in a tight race in a swing state.
In New Hampshire. Which is not a very conservative
Who's running
state.
Against a woman yeah. herself. Also, John McCain is, as well.
Right.
So, you know... Look at us go.
We knew.
We knew.
It's but interestingly, one group of people that haven't rescinded their support, voters.
Yes.
These poll numbers haven't dropped it's to too, the degree.
It's too hard to know what those poll numbers are yeah. yet. Well, of I course. Would assume
but
that
I,
those.
But they expected a like notable shift in his poll numbers over this weekend, and they haven't been seeing it.
Yeah, but
now,
just, yeah.
You know, the debate's going to happen, whatever.
Yeah.
I think that this is part of the shtick that his voters came for.
Right, so,
point you made it all this right. way. It I don't think you can live in a world where this is the straw that broke the camel's
and it
back.
Doesn't totally surprise me that his poll numbers have remained unchanged because his poll numbers are about what, at like 41 or 42?
Yeah, they've been
so
this whole time.
It doesn't matter whether they change or not because like as long as they don't go up, he is not currently creating a recipe for winning.
Exactly.
So,
yeah.
I mean...
Totally. It's just surprising to me that politically this was so difficult to touch.
Right.
And yet... The voters are like, yeah, no, we get it.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Women are stupid, and they should be grabbed by the pussy.
Yep.
In any case, this has led to some other video surfacing, or some other audio and video surfacing, and the sort of threat of some really disastrous video surfacing.
Yep.
So, to begin with, CNN found like 17 years worth of audio of Trump talking to Howard Stern.
Yeah, well, he's on Howard Stern a lot.
All
They're
the
like friends,
yeah.
he and Howard
That's
Stern.
Always a recipe for disaster.
Yeah, you just,
Howard Stern is where you go to be in trouble.
Yeah.
Like as a politician, don't go on Howard Stern.
I was going to say, if you ever have any political inklings,
like don't
ever. I mean, even if you think it might be 50 years from the time that you're like, thinking about going on Howard Stern,
don't even think
just,
about going on
to,
Howard Stern.
You can't do
he
it.
He calls his daughter Ivanka voluptuous.
Yes,
And that's in response to Stern asking if she's gotten breast implants.
Mm.
He talks about getting away with going backstage. During Miss Universe and seeing
to
the
see
contestants
the
naked.
Naked before they change, while they're changing.
Stern in 2004 asks Trump if he can call Ivanka a piece of ass, and
Trump
says yes.
Yes. Uh-huh.
They talk about women aging, and Trump calls the age of 35, quote, checkout time. And Stern asks him if he thinks he could be, quote, banging 24-year-olds, and he says, oh, absolutely.
Gosh.
Ew.
Gross. Yeah.
And then in my most uncomfortable comment of this, that also I don't even know what it means.
No one. How could you?
Stern asks, have you had a black woman in bed? And Trump responds, well, it depends on what your definition of black is. What does that mean?
I don't know.
I can't even guess. I don't even have like a theory about what a gross person might mean by that.
I know.
But, I mean, not that I'm surprised that he has vaguely racist comments in this, you know. Like,
I know.
But anyway.
He's currently basing his campaign on statements similar to that.
Right, exactly. The big bombshell is that Apprentice producers claim that there's footage of him saying the N-word.
Yes.
Now, Brent and I think, both agree that that's kind of game over.
Yes.
There's not really a way for any political establishment to stand behind him at all.
No.
If he's... I
and
mean,
even
that's
if he
sort
doesn't...
of like our shutdown word.
Yeah.
That's
and
like
he,
our,
right.
our safe word.
And even
you know?
If he doesn't drop out because of that, there, you know, Clinton has been sort of like notably having trouble galvanizing the African-American vote, at least in the same way that Obama did.
Right, and in the way that Bill
that
did.
Would... And the way that Bill did, and that would certainly do it. I mean,
yeah.
that would end it just on whether
people,
he dropped out or not.
People
like, that
might
would,
show
the,
up for
the,
Clinton.
The election
if,
would be over
yeah.
at that point.
People
like,
would show up for Clinton if
right.
the opponent was literally someone who thought it was okay on a hot mic to say the N-word.
Correct.
I
yes.
believe that he says it in private because
yeah.
I believe nothing is off limit to him in
yeah.
private. I think that similar to this, having actual audio of him saying that is a very different story.
Yeah.
And I don't know why, because we shouldn't be electing a man who we know says this word in private.
I know.
But... this is sort of like the, this is
But who
our,
would that shock that he said that? Either?
I mean,
it shouldn't shock anyone.
I know that it's not shocking as an idea.
Yeah.
I also know that hearing the N-word shocks me always.
Well,
so like,
well yes, that's true. It would
the
be
most
shocking to hear him
word
say
in
it.
American English.
Right.
And so hearing.
But as a 70-year-old racist,
well,
like
no.
when you think about it logically, like.
I know,
obviously
but
he's
this
going
is,
around saying.
Well, obviously he is. But it's like the kind of thing where like you it's like a word that can't, it's like Voldemort.
Yeah,
it's like the
I
word
know.
That can't be said.
I know.
And so hearing a native New Yorker, even, yeah. who, like, because I know that that, like, especially in New sure. York City, yeah, of course. It is a word that goes unspoken. It's a word that can't be said.
Yeah.
At least among white people. I mean, like, that's,
yeah.
that's sort of like the most despicable word that of you could course. Ever say. And so I think that even if we know privately that he is saying this word,
oh, to hear it, is,
hearing it would be yeah. shocking in no, a way that would be different. And I can't explain why this in particular would be the case, but, like, I think that that would be game over. In any case,
yeah.
Chris Nee, producer, tweeted at Mark Cuban that the producers are sitting on this footage, but she cites that there is a $5 million penalty from Mark Burnett for leaking it. Yeah. I think trying to pony up some money for it, maybe.
Yeah.
So, in any case, if someone has $5 million just lying around, and you know what? I know some of you fuckers do.
Like, I know.
Let's.
Oh, yeah. They're out there. So let's talk. Well, as soon as you told me about this, I was like,
someone's got $5 million. Yeah. 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 Where's, you know,
yeah.
one of the... Where's George Soros when you...
I know, right? Exactly.
There's rumors that Kellyanne Conway is going to quit.
Quit. Yeah.
And that's the only legitimate thing he has going for him right now, right. so that's not good.
Yeah, and that would be... I think that she almost... I feel like...
She has to quit.
You know, she's, like, young and talented and, yeah. like, has done a fairly good job yeah. as well as she could in this campaign. And I think...
She's someone who has an actual future in politics.
It's the only way to sort of, like, carry on having any credibility.
Absolutely.
It just... You can't... When the entire party has basically denounced your candidate and wants him to drop out, you can't go around, like, trying to continue to get him elected president. No. Like, you just...
You can't.
You can't.
And so, in any case, this is the scene as the debate begins... On Sunday night.
And here we go.
Tonight's debate was difficult to watch.
Which is, you guys, I'll be honest, I haven't seen it
yet. Brent was but at look, a Sia concert.
I was at the Sia and the Miguel concert. I've had the tickets forever.
You could have known.
It's almost 11 o'clock because we wanted to watch the debate before we
yeah.
came to you. So I have seen some clips, but...
Yeah, he's not fully informed. You're about to listen to me
yeah.
describe to Brent... What happened in this
I did
debate?
Feel good politically tonight, though, because during Miguel's set, he told everybody to put their hands up, and then he said, now put your middle fingers up and say with me, fuck Donald Trump. And it went throughout the entire Hollywood Bowl, chanted fuck Donald Trump for a really long time, as a matter of fact.
That's really nice to hear after what was a really rough debate-watching experience.
Yeah, sounds like.
I mean, I feel like I was sort of, like, in the fetal position for most of the debate.
Oh, it God. Was,
it was nasty. You know, the first debate was nasty.
Yeah.
And it was certainly also nasty. Donald Trump didn't seem like he was on his uppers. He was still sniffing, oddly. But
sniffing,
he
yes.
wasn't on the same uppers that he yeah. was on in the first debate.
Yeah.
So he wasn't as energetically interrupting. He just went for, like, full threat behavior.
Yeah.
There's all these hilarious clips of him, like, lurking behind
Those
her.
Those I've seen.
Which,
they're very creepy. Like, he's out making the usual faces that he
I
makes.
I mean, all the faces were made. Too. All of his usual faces were made. His inability to, like, react like a normal human being to, like, commonly yeah. known information being yeah. shuttled at him by various people. Like, it yeah. was just, like, it was all the things you think.
Yeah.
But there were so many curious things. I think, first of all, these debate moderators were awesome. Anderson Cooper, who I'm not a fan of.
No,
I often should talk him on this podcast.
I like him, but don't think that he's very good.
Exactly. Yeah, I don't have any personal animus towards him. I just, like, I don't think he's very good at his job.
No, and I don't think I don't think he's a genius.
You guys,
either.
Soft sexism. I saw so many people congratulating him on a great performance. You know who fucking owned this debate was Martha Raddatz.
God bless her. I like Martha Raddatz.
She's great. She was great 4 years ago when she, you yeah. know, when she was a moderator then. And she brought the same sort of, like, authority
yes.
and, like, organization
that Martha
to this
Raddatz
debate.
Knows things.
She gets it. She gets yeah. it. There was literally a part of this debate where she got into a debate with Donald Trump because he was just lying about Syria.
Well, Donald
he
Trump
wasn't answering her question. He was lying.
Yeah.
He was making up some nonsense.
But
and she fact-checked him just, like, repeatedly.
Yeah. Well, and it's a good thing that she was there because you know who also doesn't know about Syria?
Anderson Cooper.
That Anderson Cooper doesn't know much
no.
about Syria.
If the question had been, what can you say to gay Americans so that gay rights are guaranteed to all, he probably would have been all over that
yeah.
question.
He would have had
He's
an
great
he would have
if there's
had
a crisis in the gay community.
On Syria.
Yeah.
By the way.
But, you know, yeah, Syria is not his cup of tea.
No. That's why you need Martha Raddatz, though.
Yeah. So some highlights. And I'm literally doing this off the top of my head. We don't have any notes.
No.
The first highlight is Donald Trump was asked about his comments with the Billy Bush interview.
Sure.
And refused to deny that he had committed sexual assault in his in his answer. And Anderson Cooper kept following up and saying, so you, like, recognize that yeah. you were describing sexual assault. Have you committed sexual assault? And he kept being like, Hillary Clinton is married to Bill Clinton, who right. slept with an intern, and then she you know,
yeah.
she defended a rapist against yeah. a 12-year-old in 1970-something.
Yeah, and the hilarious thing about that is that he has been using as one of his excuses for the things that he said was that it was over a decade ago.
And he keeps pointing to her record from like 30 years ago.
Exactly, from like a court case of hers from the 70s yeah. and then like all of Bill Clinton's things like being from the early 90s.
Exactly.
So it's like, it was totally...
That did not go unnoticed by anyone with a thinking brain, I don't think.
I'm glad.
Because it was like, because they specifically stated that he had made those comments when he was 59.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Like,
no
they...
spring chicken.
Even Martha Raddatz, I think it was Martha Raddatz who said it, but even the moderators
yeah.
were like, these comments were made 10 years ago when you were 59.
Yeah.
Like, can you defend them?
Yeah.
And he said that they didn't get it. It was just locker room talk.
Oh, boy.
And everyone's like, what locker
right.
rooms?
Yeah.
Obviously, but like, also, what talk? What is this, like... What were you saying? What does it even mean? I saw on Twitter that a lot of people had stolen my his fingers are not long enough to grab a pussy
yeah,
joke
that,
too.
That was good.
So
yeah.
I that was something I like while watching the debate. I noticed that I was not the only one who came up with that, but I feel good about having said it anyway.
I do too.
I feel, right, it was feel a, good. I came up with it on my own.
You did.
So
I know.
I feel good about it.
Yeah.
In any case, there was that.
Yeah.
There was when he said that he was going to lock her up. He basically, yeah. he said he was going to appoint a special prosecutor
yeah.
to see what he had on her, basically,
sure.
when he becomes president. And then later,
right.
she said something about blah, 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 if he becomes president or whatever.
To charge her with something that the
he said,
FBI just decided
jail.
Not to? Is that what
yes.
is that what his big
exactly.
plan is?
Yeah, that's
oh,
his. It's not clear that he had a great understanding of the powers of the executive
right.
branch.
Or just
it's,
the law
or the
in
law.
General, probably.
It, yeah. it is clear that he sort of saw being elected to president, to be the president, as sort of like a chance to be, to try out being an emperor.
A dictator.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Like,
uh-huh.
Yeah. It didn't seem, and I would contend that he doesn't even intend to be a dictator
yeah.
because he intends to pass the reins to Ivanka. Obviously.
Yeah. Well, he's just trying to do what he thinks his bestie Vladimir Putin would do.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean,
and it would be to
and
lock
up
to
lock
and
up
or
political
poison
opponents.
His political opponents.
It happened in Ukraine.
yeah.
As my arch nemesis Paul Begala noted afterwards, that's
oh,
it, literally exactly what happened in Ukraine.
sure.
It was the one time I didn't... I mean, he was saying it condescendingly to someone else,
yeah,
obviously.
Of course.
But like,
that's
he was
the,
right.
That's his shtick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But so... There was that gem.
Mm-hmm.
There was the weird moment where he went onto a weird rant about Syria that no one understood, where he was asked specifically about his plan, and he instead, like, I don't even know what he said. I'm like, I listened to all of it, and
can't
at
wait.
The end of it was like,
what?
Was I don't even know what question that could have answered, and also, is that relevant to the question? Like, is that relevant to
probably
the topic?
Not.
And but then Hillary Clinton did her thing where she named, like, every general
sure.
in the army and
yep.
every person who lives in Syria.
And you were asleep by the end of
and
that
I was
answer.
Like, and it was the first time that I wasn't annoyed by it because I felt like it really did make a contrast with him because he talked for so long
sure.
and said so
about
little.
Nothing. Yeah.
It really felt like he really seemed like someone who is not used to being challenged, who was being challenged in a forum where he just wasn't
yeah.
having it.
He's also not used to knowing things about
yeah.
things.
No, and he's used to everyone taking his nonsense and being like, yes, sir.
Yeah, exactly.
And so, yep. and this was like very frustrating, you could tell, because
yeah.
people were not saying yes, sir to him.
Yeah.
They had much stronger debate moderators who were much more sort of like on top of him.
Yeah.
They interrupted him when he interrupted her. And then when he said things that were just like bald-faced lies, some of the time everyone just sort of sat on it. It was
sure.
weird because obviously Hillary Clinton had sort of decided that she wasn't going to be an attack dog, but she sort of... had to counter his points that she was the liar and she was the problem and
right.
she was the one who discriminates.
Well, this is what he,
she was the one.
This
it
is
was
what
the Mike
he,
Pence
right.
school of.
Yeah, well, and it's he's done it before too. This is
absolutely.
This is not,
yeah.
you know,
no.
I mean, like, as soon as somebody says that he is a bully, then his
like,
response
you know, he's
is
a real bully.
Yeah, is you. He,
yeah.
He's does the, he's like the master, not that it takes much thought, but he's like, he's the I know you are, but what am or
yeah.
I.
I
yeah,
know
right?
I yeah, I know you are, but what am I?
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Like the whole thing where he's just like he takes
he
exactly what you say about him and then is just like, no, you are.
Exactly.
And it's like, well, that doesn't make
any No,
like,
and so it
not,
made him sound crazy.
Sense.
It turned her into a bit of an attack dog because she had to be like, well, Donald is telling you lies. Like he's lying about my record.
Yeah.
And she was right. He was
yeah.
lying about a record. They asked her questions about her speeches and
yeah.
her emails and
yeah.
all of that business. It made me sad for America that there were so many scandals to ask about at this debate.
right, right. it's a sad state.
Yeah. But yeah. it was just, like, overall minus content minus anything else, just like horrifying to watch. Oh. It was horrifying to watch.
God, you know how I love a good horror flick.
I know. It was like kind of low energy in a way that made it not the sort of theatrics of reality TV that you're looking for.
It's like a Jeb Bush.
It was like a style Jeb Bush low energy attack dog like nonsense fest. And it was depressing. So, in
can't
any
wait.
Case,
I'm going to go watch.
That's what happened at this debate. I'm sort of, I think that, you know, Donald, there was like weird media talk of him like sort of resuscitating his campaign on the basis of this performance. Here's my read on sort of how this all works out over time.
Sure. Donald Trump. I have thoughts on this too, even though I haven't even seen it. But they're probably going to be your thoughts.
He didn't lose any voters. Because his voters are rabid lunatics.
Yeah, they're all they're not
they
going
were
anywhere.
On board for him to be
he was he was right
admit,
to say
essentially admit he had committed sexual assault. Right. That was fine.
I mean, he was has famously said that he could go out and shoot someone in the street in New York, and his followers would still be with him, and he's proven that he is correct.
He's also claimed that Hillary Clinton should be put down because she could shoot someone, and no one would do anything about it. He has curious standards. I disagree with that for sure. Yeah. But I mean, he's also applied that as a
sure.
You know, an insult to Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
So, but I don't think this changed his sort of core voters.
Yeah.
I think that this could be a very influential debate for undecided voters such as they are. I think, you know, as far as I can see it, undecided voters are people who can't stand either of them.
Right.
And to not be able to stand either of them is understandable. They're both insufferable people.
Right.
To not be able to stand Donald Trump in this context felt very different than not being able to stand Hillary Clinton. She had her moments of being an insufferable know-it-all, for sure.
Yeah.
She otherwise seemed like a fairly competent person. I obviously was going for the, like, temperament vote.
Yeah.
She made a lot of comments about how she wants to be the president for all of us, that she wants to represent all of us. You know, that she was really harping on that.
She wins by continuing to just look like the more reasonable of the two. And that is a fairly easy thing for her to do, but that's all she needs to do. So even if
she
didn't land,
that
is all she can do. But like, I mean, I haven't seen it yet, but like, even if she didn't land the quote knockout punch, like if she like basically stood up there for an hour and a half and like continued to breathe, then like I am of the mind that that is all she needs to continue
to
do.
She had one stroke of luck, which was the final moment of the debate. They were asked to name one quality they admire in the other.
Ooh.
And she went first and said that she admired that he has great children.
Sure.
Now, she knows his children. It was sad because it reminded me that we're basically dealing with an aristocracy.
Right.
And that they all know each other and they're all in cahoots, which I knew, but I like to forget when I can. But we know that she knows, you know, Chelsea is friends with Ivanka Trump.
Yeah.
Like, we know that they know each other's families.
Yeah.
He said that she's a tenacious fighter who never gives up. He basically, like, made a campaign ad for her at the end after claiming that he's the only one who can get things done. And he blamed her for not single-handedly changing the tax code while she was in the Senate, like, repeatedly.
But he talked about all the time how she doesn't have the stamina.
Yeah.
And then he just basically, went back on that.
Exactly.
Like, yeah.
This debate, not only did he spend the entire time knocking her for not single-handedly accomplishing things in the Senate that were things that there wasn't a consensus, and it was a Republican, you know, there was a Republican president, there was no consensus on these things, and they were all things that she was on the record supporting, so he just chose, like, the worst possible, you know, it was like corporate tax loopholes that she has a record of trying to close, and so he found the few things that could be refuted and named those, and then at the very end, after months of trying to build this narrative that she's too weak to be the president, she doesn't have the right temperament because she won't be as tough a fighter as I will. The only good thing he can think of is, well, she never gives up. Come on.
Right.
So in any case,
he's going to have to re-remind everyone early tomorrow that she's dying.
Exactly. Well, I mean, but she sort of lucked out because he could have said that her children were the great. And then what would she have said?
Yeah.
But like, he basically, she said the greatest thing about Donald Trump is someone else.
Right.
And he said the greatest thing about Hillary Clinton is the quality she's been trying to sell all of you this entire time.
Right.
And it's true.
Like,
it was crazy. So in any case, she, I think, walked out of that debate just by existing, looking like a hero. This is the first time that I feel like, in my opinion, her just existing and him just existing might
favored her.
Normally, I don't think that. And I think the audience was a little rowdy and they, you know, they were, it seemed like there were some aggressive Trump people in the audience who couldn't shut up and, mm-hmm. you know, they're not supposed to cheer or anything, but they did. Yeah. But yeah, the last moments of the debate were the most favorable to her because after a long conversation about Syria that nobody cared about, it was like, all of a sudden, this softball question comes. Everyone was like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Like, no one gets asked about, like, a woman's right to choose or anything. We spend the beginning of the debate talking about sexual assault.
Yeah.
You know, there were two other moments that I have to mention before before I forget. I'm sorry I'm all over the place. But there were two other moments. These are the moments that you're going to see repeated in the press. A Muslim American woman asked a question about Islamophobia. Oh. And he basically answered by saying that Islamophobia is... how I feel. Like, he basically, like, she was like, what are you going to do about the fact that, like, we are now feeling scared as the Muslim community?
Yeah.
And his answer was just, like, straight spewing Islamophobia himself.
Oh, God.
He kind of tried to veer it into a foreign policy question about how we need to vet, you know, immigrants better and, like, then we need to have serious vetting for immigrants.
Vetting.
It was, like, 100% crazy Islamophobia. And then there were these weird moments. He kept talking about the inner city and... Then also he kept mentioning Bernie Sanders. There were like a few things he kept saying.
Yeah, I heard that.
And I don't. The Bernie Sanders thing was a weird choice.
It's a weird move.
It was not a smart move.
I think he just like that used to be a thing for him. And I think when he doesn't know what to talk about, he sort of just like reaches back into his mind for things that he has like been told to say previously. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like
it doesn't totally.
Like
I don't. Yeah,
because
it's all
he was really rolling with that for a while, but it was like, you know, it was in June.
Exactly.
So like, so, but he doesn't know what he's saying. He can't make
his thoughts happen.
Right.
The other moment like that was that an African American man asked a question about, so like a sort of along the similar lines of like represent all of us or whatever.
Sure.
And so he decided to name all the people he was going to represent. And the first thing he said was inner city people. And he kept mentioning inner city, the inner city in this very like outmoded way. Where I was, like, in a room where I was, like, I am literally the only person here who's actually from the inner city. Because inner cities right now are just rich white people. Totally. So, like, that's... Yeah. But I was, like, this is such a bizarrely, like, coded and outmoded way to speak.
Totally.
And it was, like, funny that he didn't know that. But it was also, like, bizarre that he thought the right thing to do was... to answer a question from a Muslim American woman who was worried about how he's been, like, you know, creating racist hate everywhere.
The ghetto.
Well, exactly. Like, and then to the one question from an African American man, he answers by saying that he cares about people in the inner city. Like, it was just, it was so, like, cut and dry, like,
I'm really excited about this because I was actually talking to the people that I was at the concert with tonight and they were like, aren't you terrified by this election? And I feel like I've gone through some sort of stages with this thing because like I was initially
I was initially
not afraid at all.
Right.
And then there were moments, especially like in August, like after the DNC and like her bump went away, where I was like,
shit.
Things, not good things are happening right now.
Yeah.
And now I am back to feeling like fairly comfortable enough that I can go back to sort of like seeing this as sort of like almost like an art piece, like this whole election.
That's how I'm having to think about it.
So I, as of like Friday and maybe a little, I think probably actually starting at the last debate, I'm back to really just like living for this again.
Well, you're going to enjoy this one.
Everybody else is like, I can't wait for this election to be over. And I'm like, as long as I
feel,
as long as I can feel fairly confident that she's going to win, this is just great.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it's going to cause problems later, so that won't be good. And then I'll probably feel bad that I felt this way. But as for now, selfishly, this is where I'm at.
Where we are. In any case, let's move on.
Let's.
Here's what we came for.
Yes.
Jill Stein, in the flesh, in our studio.
Brain Trust Live.
I said that in air quotes.
Uh-huh.
Brain Trust Live.
Being legitimate journalists
with media credentials. Here's our interview with Jill Stein.
Why do you think you're the right choice for millennials? And additionally, for millennials who are thinking about voting third party, why do you think you're the better choice than Gary Johnson would be?
Okay, so like, why millennials? I'd have to say, I think I'm the only candidate who's not a zombie out there, you know? I think most of our politics is living in a dead world, you know? It's not the world that we're living in right now, and it's certainly not the world that we're headed to. Millennials are really seeing, you know, the future and where this is all going, and where this is going is a very dangerous place, you know, to a climate that's crashing, to wars that are blowing back at us that know no end. a generation that's locked in debt that has no way to get out, and to 2,000 nuclear missiles on hair trigger alert. And Hillary Clinton wants to start an air war with Russia over Syria. This is absolute, you know, madness. This is craziness. So I'm a mother on fire, you know, and as a medical doctor, I became aware of this absolute health crisis that has descended on us, where half of Americans now basically have one chronic illness or another, and young people in particular are falling, you know, victims to asthma, to cancers, to diabetes, you know, to just a whole slew of illnesses that we shouldn't have. So I'm now practicing political medicine, having seen where this is taking us, that we're not going to get out of here alive, and we've got to fix our sick political system so that we can get down to the things that are actually killing us, like climate change, poverty, war, you know, the usual suspects. Compared to the libertarians, you know, unfortunately, the libertarians are also taking the money. In their mind, there can't be too much money in politics, that buying politics is just, that's what the free world looks like. The free world, in their minds, or at least in the mind of my opponent, Gary Johnson, the free world means that corporations are free, and, you know, and they're busy getting government out of the way so that corporations have unrestricted ability to just steamroll right over us. So, you know, on climate, they don't have a solution. Gary says the sun is going to blow up and burn the earth up anyhow, you know. So on the war, you know, well, I'm not sure what their solution is on the war. I know they protest the war. That's great. But I don't know that they're ready to actually cut the military budget and bring the troops home. On student debt, they don't have a plan. I'm calling for free public higher education, which pays for itself. For every dollar we put in, we get back seven. And for bailing out the students, because Democrats and Republicans bailed out the crooks on Wall Street. If we could bail out the crooks on Wall Street, it's time to bail out their victims. So for all those reasons, I think it's an absolute no-brainer for young people to stand up for the future we deserve, forget the lesser evil, fight for the greater good, like our lives depend on it. They do. And the numbers of millennials alone are enough to win this race when people stand up to bail out students, come out and vote for it, vote green in 2016, and we can, you know, we can win this hands down.
What would you say to Democrats who invoke the Ralph Nader, Florida, year 2000 boogeyman?
Well, that was 2000. This is now. Ralph was ahead of his time. But where we are now is that the majority of voters are saying these are the most untrustworthy, disliked candidates in history. And the majority of voters is saying we need an open debate so that we can find out who the other candidates are. And a majority of voters is also smart enough to say we need an independent major third party because the two parties have done such a bad job of leading us forward. They are serving the predatory banks, the fossil fuel giants, and the war profiteers. We need a new politics of, by, and for the people. That's the way forward. Don't drink the Kool-Aid. Reject this nonsense that says be good little boys and girls and take your marching orders from the political operatives and the corporate pundits who want to talk you out of your right to deciding your future. They have the most disliked and untrusted candidates. Even their own supporters don't really support them. They mostly oppose the other candidate. Democracy is not a question of who do we hate the most or who do we fear the most. Democracy needs a moral compass. It needs a vision of our way forward. We have to stand up and lead the way. In the words of Alice Walker, biggest way people give up power is by not knowing we have it to start with. We have it. Time to stand up and use it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
I really appreciate it.
Thanks a lot.
So we interviewed Jill at a rally.
Yeah.
And so there were supporters of hers there as well as other media.
Yep.
And while we were in the media line, we met these two high school reporters.
Yes.
Who we asked if we could interview because we were so curious how they had come to interview Jill Stein at a rally.
And
they were just delights.
If I've ever had hope for the future,
yeah,
it was these two. They can't even vote.
They can't vote yet.
They're going to tell you.
No.
But like,
they were so articulate.
We want to play the whole interview for you.
Yeah.
We interviewed some other people and we have clips of that. But like, this interview warrants being played in its entirety,
like,
because
these two are dreams. They're dreams. And this is a sign that I feel like there is hope for the future, maybe.
Yes.
So here's that interview.
Hi, I'm Makaria Yami.
and I'm a senior at Bonita High School. I'm the editor-in-chief of The Paw Print, which is our school newspaper.
Hi, I'm Miles Nolte. I'm also a senior at Bonita High School, and I'm the editor-in-chief of all online and digital content for The Paw Print.
Awesome. And is this, because you said you were seniors, and so this is this the first election you can vote in? Can you vote in this election, or is this kind of just the beginning of your political awareness?
Yeah, so you're not going to be old enough to vote either, right? Yeah, so neither of us are actually going to be able to vote in this election, but we've been on our debate team, you know, our whole time in high school. We're very interested in politics. We also, you know, wanted to cover this event, but yeah, we're big Jill supporters, you know, wanted to just show our support.
Were you Bernie Sanders supporters before the Democratic primary process ended?
Yeah, I was originally a Bernie supporter. It took me a while to support Jill just because I didn't feel like she could really win, and I was more focused on wanting to defeat Trump. But now that I've heard more of Jill's message, I think that I'm fully on her campaign.
Do you find people that you go to school with are also Jill supporters? Are they invested in the election? Are they paying attention?
So, you know, our specific group of friends, like, that we hang out with and talk to, you know, we're all very invested in the election. But a lot of kids at our school are definitely not invested in the election. And also, we have a large number of Trump supporters at our school as well. We're from a pretty conservative school.
Really?
Yeah. So we're trying, you know, as best as we can through our newspaper, you know, through our opinion section, obviously, to try to educate our students about, you know, what Trump's really about, what it means, what a Trump presidency would mean, and why we should be supporting candidates like Jill Stein and supporting third parties in general.
Do you, when you hear from Hillary Clinton supporters that a vote for a third party candidate is a vote for Trump, and when you sort of hear the very binary narrative this election gets covered as, do you feel like this would be, if you could vote, a protest vote? Do you feel like this is the definition of a protest vote? Is a protest vote a bad thing? Like, what are your thoughts on protest votes as we've been hearing them demonized and discussed?
Yeah, I mean, I can't vote, but if I did vote for Jill, I don't think it would be a protest vote. It's just voting for someone that I believe can truly create change. Voting for the lesser evil and calling things protest votes is what got us to this place, what got us two terrible candidates, and what's keeping us in the two-party system. So I really don't agree with that narrative.
And I think that, you know, like, as a voter, I would like to think that, you know, when I can vote, my vote means more than just, you know, like, taking votes away from the other party. I think that when Hillary Clinton's campaign says that a vote for Jill or a vote for Gary Johnson is a vote for Trump, she's degrading voters and telling them that their vote is nothing less than just weighing a scale a little bit more or a little bit less. I think that our votes should mean more than that.
What are your thoughts on Gary Johnson?
I don't really like Gary Johnson very much, and after seeing some town halls, I do feel like he's not very knowledgeable. I mean, after his Aleppo moment, the fact that he doesn't know any...
After his second Aleppo
yeah,
moment.
Yeah, his second
Aleppo moment.
Yeah, and I don't agree with the libertarian ideals in the first place. I do think that we need a lot of government regulation and things like the economy, because I think that is what rips people off, especially the middle class, the working class. So, I mean, I don't agree with his values and I don't agree with him.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think, yeah, I think Gary Johnson's an idiot. But I do think that we should be supporting third parties, you know, regardless, because you can see that there are a lot of Republican voters who are also very discontent with Donald Trump. And I think that really just the message coming from the Democrats and the Republicans is that you have to vote for one or the other. So I think that it's a good idea to support Gary Johnson's right to run and other people's right to vote for him.
Nice, perfect.
That's great. Yeah. Thank you guys so much. And then finally, here is just a sort of mashup of the rest of our time at that rally.
Yeah, because it was
fun.
We
stayed for the whole rally. Once, you know, we interviewed Jill Stein at the beginning of the rally before it started, and we stayed for the whole time because it was fun, and we were kind of interested to see who was there.
Yeah, we talked to some other people.
We talked a lot about why, you know, they felt comfortable voting for Jill Stein, what their thoughts were on protest voting, things like that.
Yeah.
And we also just observed the kind of hilarious things that happened at a Green Party rally.
Yes.
So here is just sort of a quick sort of compilation of everything else we did there.
Enjoy.
We're at the Stein Rally.
At the Stein Rally.
We're too early.
Eating Cheerios.
We're eating Cheerios out of a plastic baggie. We'll update you when the Cheerios are done. Okay, we're waiting in the press line.
We're at the press line.
We
the
have
first time we've
in.
Ever said those words before.
I know. We're also first in the press line, which is a sign of our immaturity, I think.
This is what democracy looks like.
A crowd is starting to gather.
There's going to be some other Green Party candidates speaking. There's going to be a progressive hip-hop artist.
Of course.
Like,
listen, Jill Stein plays the bongo drums. Like, let's not kid ourselves that there's no progressive hip-hop artist in attendance here.
I bet her bongo drumming is better than Tim Kaine's harmonica playing.
I mean, it's, like, without question. We don't even need any sort of science to back us up there.
Yeah, I'd much rather be in a drum circle with Jill Stein than any harmonica performance
literally
with Tim
any
Kaine.
Day.
Or just anywhere at all with Tim Kaine.
That's so true.
Jill, not Hill! Jill, not Hill!
So we were just handed an ad for the SoCal Veg Fest in Orange County, celebrating healthy eating and conscious living.
Yeah, I'm really feeling like I'm with my people here now.
Also
yoga, which I know you're against.
Yeah, this sounds like a nightmare scenario for me, fully. And then a Halloween costume contest.
No.
Just because.
No.
Yeah, I wonder who the celebrity speakers and live music are going to be.
You won't have heard of any of them.
Official first sighting of a bombing for peace is like fucking virginity sign. The anti-war movement has made it.
I saw the lights and the little spark they made. The red, the white, the blue, the flash. I'm telling myself I'm all right. I'll pull the car by the road and talk to the man.
Okay, so to the Dan Savage point, this is all local Green candidates at this rally.
Correct.
So I will say that Jill Stein is literally just supporting local candidates.
That's right. We have heard from a lot of speakers tonight, and they all introduce themselves as former Bernie delegates. It's almost like
huge applause.
It's like being at like an AA meeting, sort of. You know what I mean? It's sort of like, hi, my name is such and such. I'm the former Bernie delegate. They're like reformed Bernie delegates.
Yeah, this is
working on themselves.
This is where
within
you go
the Green Party.
To work on yourself and not support corporate interests.
That's it.
That's what you do.
Yeah.
Just heard about Dr. Steen.
From one of the speakers.
From one of the speakers.
Yikes.
Tell us what draws you to Jill Stein.
Wow. Well, I was really drawn to Jill Stein because I have a lot of foster kids that are now grown children, 25 and older. And they called me one day and they said, you know, Mom, you got to do something. You can't just sit around the house and go to work. You've got to save the planet. I'd like our police not to be militaristic and kill our children on the streets. That's not cool. You know, I'd like free education for my children through college. I would love my children not to be straddled with $100,000, $200,000 in student debt coming out of just a four-year education. I would like the planet to still be here for my children and my grandchildren.
How have you reacted to the conversation about protest votes being away, throwing away your vote?
Well, my vote was never going to be a wasted vote because I was never voting for the mainstream candidates. The Republican and the Democratic Party were never seeing my vote. I voted for Jill in 2012 also. So I am not a wasted vote. I was never their vote to begin with.
The Nader argument has been disproven time and time again. So if people would just do their research, they would see that that is not true.
We've spent more time this election explaining that to people than I ever thought we would, because I didn't even vote for Ralph Nader.
I know.
But like, I've suddenly become his biggest
his
advocate.
I know.
And I didn't think that was going to happen. But, here we are.
Yeah. 2016, the year of new beginnings.
The year of new beginnings. It's always a new beginning.
He's yelling at me behind the open door. With the noise of the highway, I can't make out his words.
Do you feel like you are contributing in any way to the Trump phenomenon by not voting for Hillary Clinton, or do you think that that's not a relevant question?
I just feel that a vote for Jill has always been a vote for Jill, no matter what.
For people that are in the Democratic Party, very entrenched, like the Tulsi Gabbards and whatever, I get it.
But for me,
I don't have any.
To fundraising, it's their path to their voice. It's,
There is something about standing on principle at a certain point. It's like having a child that's being a bad kid all the time. How do you continue to condone their behavior? Like, you kind of can't. Put your foot down and say, no, it's not tolerated, so they don't get away with it.
So many Greens have been ahead of the curve. But that curve has caught up to us, and we are now burning green together, and we are unstoppable together. Not only can we cancel student debt, we have the numbers to make public higher education free. We have a right to a college education because it's essential in the 21st century. And while we're at it, we can also have health care as a human right for everyone through Medicare for all. It doesn't cost us any more money. It simply means we put our health care dollars actually into health care, not into bureaucracy, red tape, and profiteering. We need a health care system for people, not for profit. We also need a welcoming path to citizenship for the immigrants who have always been at the heart of our economies, our community, and our culture. We call for a new offensive in the Middle East. It's called a peace offensive. So we say, forget the lesser evil, fight for the greater good, like our lives depend on it, because they do.
We just finished listening to Jill Stein
speak. She was great.
She was really good. Yeah. She was great. She gave us some exciting new terminology like zombie Democrats.
Zombie Democrats. My new favorite thing ever.
She also introduced this hip-hop artist who is currently singing Power to the People in a lisp.
Yes. He wrote it for her.
Yeah, he wrote it for her. Yeah. You might be surprised to hear that, but you shouldn't be.
Woman who introduced her from Black Lives Matter was great.
Oh, she was also great, too. Yep. Yeah. So I feel like missing the hip-hop artist is the least of our worries.
That's
here.
Right. Also, it's late. We're old.
Super old.
So if all of that wasn't enough.
Yeah.
If Donald Trump talking about grabbing women by the pussy was not enough. If the debate happening right on the heels of that was not enough.
Us
if
being our real press people.
Jill Stein interview was not enough.
Yep.
This was the week that the Clinton speeches got released.
What?
What?
Yeah. Luckily, never has Hillary Clinton had such a good
this is the
bit
luck-
of luck.
This like, is the she, luckiest thing that's literally ever
say,
happened
because
to her.
She, you know, bless her heart, as they say, has sort of, it's not always the luckiest when it comes
especially
to things
timing-wise.
Like this. Timing-wise, and just sort of like leak-wise, and just all the things that she sort of like ends up having to defend herself
This is a
from.
Woman who's dealt with 1 year straight of just unfortunately timed leaks.
Right, exactly. And people have been calling for her Wall Street speeches throughout the entire Democratic
Times
primary.
Wrote an editorial about it.
Well over a year, really and a half at this point. And they hit basically moments after the Trump pussy-grabbing video
First
drops.
Of all, WikiLeaks, if they are, as the DNC claims, potentially wrongly, that Russian hackers are behind this.
I know.
WikiLeaks just, like, totally shot their credibility here. Not because they released, you know, secret documents.
Right.
But because they timed it so,
so poorly.
Poorly,
I know.
They made zero headlines with this information.
And they did it on a, like, even if you're...
Yeah, they dumped it at the...
Right, like, even if you can't know what's about to happen with this Trump leak, like, the fact that it happened sort of, like, on a Friday afternoon was weird, too. I don't know if they wanted to drop it, like, leading into the presidential debate.
I think that's probably what their plan was.
But, like, as everyone knows, like, a Friday dump is, like...
It might as well be shouted into the wilderness.
Exactly.
It's like if a tree falls.
Yes, exactly.
I mean, and also, it was kind of curious that they didn't do a better job of getting this into a news cycle, considering that it was going to be challenging to find enough controversy in this race in these speeches.
Yeah,
now,
I agree.
She says things that are annoying.
Yes,
and I think not great.
Right, and I think some of these things would have. I think a lot of Sanders supporters are angry about this, and not just because the things in here are so terrible, although they certainly aren't great. Some of them, but like this, there's enough here. I think that if they would have come out in the midst
of
a Democratic primary against Bernie Sanders, it could have, perhaps, and maybe not. Who knows? But there's some things in here that I think could have turned it.
They're not
perhaps
the controversy that we sort of anticipated them being. What they are is her confirming that she is in bed with Wall Street, as we know.
Right.
There is sort of like vocal confirmation in these speeches that she is on the side of Wall Street, that she doesn't understand the concerns of middle America or of the middle class, that she doesn't have any personal relationship to that, and that also she plays a sort of duplicitous brand of politics where she believes that as a politician you have to distinguish between your private and public views, and she articulates that in these speeches. So I think in the primary process these would have hit on a lot of points that would have been really concerning for
I think the thing that may actually, another thing that like rarely behooves her, I think, is sort of like her headiness and her yeah. ability to sort of like talk around all sides of the issues.
This is working on her. This is working for her.
And it works really well in her favor here.
Because we don't know what the fuck she's talking about.
Because if you read all of these and you read their quotes in their entirety, you really just sort of, you're both bored and you've gone cross-eyed by the end of them.
Correct.
Because, like,
they don't mean anything.
So, like, this is...
She's talking nonsense.
Right, this is one time where her, you know, lawyerly talk...
It really worked for
really
her.
Really worked out yeah. in her benefit.
Yeah. And it sort of made this not flashy enough to compete with anything that Donald Trump has done at any point in this
point.
Cycle.
Yeah,
I mean, this could have been released at any point in the yeah. general.
Here are some of the just sort of like specific, I almost called them gems. They're hardly even.
Right.
Problem points, yes. She talks about being out of touch with the middle class. She sort of like goes on a big long story about like growing up middle class and her dad's business and having good public schools and blah, 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 and affordable health care and whatever. And then she says, quote, "And now, obviously, I'm kind of far removed because the life I've lived and the economic, you know, fortunes that my husband and I now enjoy. But I haven't forgotten it." I don't think that quote's that terrible, but
no.
she does. If you parse
well,
it out,
it's actually kind of
she
nice.
Does... Right,
to
she
hear
does,
her admit
right.
that she's
she,
not
she
fucking
does,
regular
she,
person.
Right, exactly. She does say that she's out of touch with the middle
yes.
class. So that could have been, like,
well, and I think
just
that
a portion of that quote could have been used against her.
That certainly, in the primary process, and to me now to some extent,
right.
confirms what the problem with
well,
her
right.
is.
Totally.
It's just that it's not a secret problem, so I'm
no.
not shocked to hear that she
well,
knows
right.
it's a
and
problem,
and it also
too.
Certainly doesn't hurt her in a race against a person who is more out of touch with the middle class
exactly.
than she is.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah. The Bernie Sanders race, this is
exactly.
a problem.
Who's like borderline a poor person.
Exactly.
like
for
that,
a senator, he's right. impoverished.
right.
I mean, that is right. a problem. This is a problem statement for that race.
Right.
In the
but not here.
Against a billionaire
it's not,
or
not a Trump
potentially
problem.
A nobody. We don't know if he has any money, but
no,
we know
we
that
don't.
He thinks he has money.
Yeah. She talked about having a public and private position. She said, you know, all of the backroom discussions and the deals, you know, the people get a little nervous, to say the least, so you need both a public and a private position. I think... you're right that sort of like only tells us that she's duplicitous. I think that generally
we also know this about politicians
yeah. like her and everyone. I mean
right.
like I don't think that that's any sort of
no.
you know it's unfortunate to have someone sort of like declare openly that that's
yeah.
actually
to
the
a
case
room full of bankers.
To a room full of bankers
who,
but
they're
also
like here's
like,
the inside scoop bankers
right.
I'm not being honest
right
and then regular voters
yeah.
don't worry about me
right but also but, don't act like you're scandalized by that statement.
Well, exactly
because
right it's we this is all common sense
yeah exactly
She talks about the game being rigged, and in this I think would have been perceived as very sort of patronizing
yes.
to regular voters. She was talks about the game being rigged on the campaign trail as
right,
well.
Like
she's borrowing language from Liz Warren,
and, Warren
Bernie
and
Sanders.
Bernie Sanders.
And
this is a thing that she
private,
does a lot.
She says, even if it may not be 100% true, if the perception is that somehow the game is rigged, that should be a problem for all of us.
Right.
Now, she's making a good point to bankers.
Yes.
But she's also indicating that she doesn't think that the problems that everyone in America thinks are problems are real problems.
Right, exactly.
And
yeah.
I think that's probably not great.
This is another, I think, would have been troublesome for her in the primary,
yes.
is that in speaking about financial reform, she said, today there's more that can and should be done that really has to come from the industry itself. So she
right.
doesn't want to... And
she talks up self-regulation.
Right, exactly. And
lot.
And going on a similar subject, she says, the people that know the industry better than anybody are the people who work in the industry, which is not necessarily wrong, but like this is how we end up getting the sort of like same old, same old. It's how
exactly.
you get the same people in your administration. It's how you get the same advisors who are the people who crash
and
the economy who work at Goldman Sachs.
Exactly.
Like, this is,
it's how you make it so that everyone has a conflict of interest who's making financial policy.
exactly.
So,
yes.
And so I think that is
and
sort
we,
of...
And
true in the sense that we all know the industry we
right.
work in, the best of all the industries.
That's true. Yes.
And maybe not Brent and I, because we work in Hollywood. No one knows that industry. But you can't assume that the people who have specific personal interests in making the industry richer
right.
are the people who are going to regulate
who
it better.
Who can regulate
They don't
themselves.
Have the people's
right.
interest in mind.
They're not. It doesn't. It doesn't benefit them to do so. So
no,
like
exactly.
you can't get an entire industry to. Act in a way that is not like that is like totally unbeneficial to them.
Exactly. Yeah. Like
that's
bonkers town.
It's crazy. Like anyone would even think that was a rational
yeah.
thought to have is ridiculous.
Well, I feel like this is a rational thought to have if your plan is to make that industry richer.
Well, exactly.
So
which she
admits
that
that's her plan. So
exactly. Yes.
And uh-huh. that's you know her relationship with Wall Street. She says, as senator, I represented and worked with so many on Wall Street, and quote, did all I could to make sure they continued to prosper.
Sure.
She also talks about how you need Wall Street money to run for president.
Yeah.
She interestingly talks about the benefits of single payer health care, saying it can get cost downs and offers good or better primary care, but then says they impose things like waiting times. And now I want to, for just a moment, say that you need to dream a little bigger than this, only because the reason that our private system does not impose waiting times is because only rich people can access some of these things. You know?
Yeah.
If you need a lung transplant and you're fucking broke, you can't have one. Can't have, so there's no waiting times for rich people because they can pay for them. Right. Like, we need a system where poor people can also get lung transplants. Right,
exactly. Yes.
Like, that if, and we can decide if they impose waiting times in an acceptable way.
Right.
But just like, that's like, that argument always makes me nuts, because it means they impose waiting times and we can't let our rich people suffer.
No, we can't.
We can't let rich people suffer when poor people suddenly need health care.
So true.
Like, that's what that says. This, so that annoys me. What, but
it's interesting that she took the stance, especially knowing that we also just read a quote about her talking about having a public and private stance on something. It seems like this would be your, like, I guess this was private, but I mean, like, it's curious that this is what she actually thinks, but on the campaign trail, she's talking about how she doesn't think that we can't have it.
Yeah.
But, like, when she actually feels like she wants it. Like, it seems like the reverse
of what
order
you should do.
Of what she should be
use
telling
the big
people.
Rhetoric on the road, privately believe it's not possible.
Right.
That's what you do.
Right? So
that's
weird.
That's what a politician is supposed to do.
Yeah. She's doing it wrong. She's got this backwards.
You dream big in public, and then you're like, okay, what can we do to sort of make this work?
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Because she says, even, she goes on, cites President Johnson's success in establishing Medicare and Medicaid. She said she wants to see the U.S. have healthcare like in Canada, universal healthcare.
Yep.
Like, it's so weird that on then in public she has to be like, nobody think big.
I know.
Let's.
We're gonna
make some minor
Obamacare.
Changes to Obamacare, and that's all we can have. So don't even ask for more.
I know.
We won't even talk about it.
No. Weird.
So weird.
Yeah. The most highlighted one that I have seen on my trips to the Drudge Report, and I do think that this
is a problem.
This could be problematic for her, although
not in this race. I don't think.
I don't think so either. I mean, it will. You know, the Trump folks who are racists and who want to kick all of the brown people out and who are super anti-trade are going to dive onto this statement. But I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how this one plays out. But here's what she said. My dream is a hemispheric common market with open trade and open borders sometime in the future, with energy that is as green as and sustainable as we can get it, powering growth and opportunity for every person in the hemisphere. So it's interesting
it's
the open trade and open borders part of that is going to be repeated. It's going to be in commercials that are going to start running soon, probably.
It's going to piss off the left.
Yeah.
It's also interesting that this area she can dream big in publicly.
I know. Right. Exactly.
Nobody dream big about healthcare.
No.
But the dream
but
is
open borders.
Let's open all the borders.
Right. Which I don't have a problem with.
No. If that means that citizenship also works that way.
Yeah.
I have a problem with it if it's only open for corporations.
Right.
That I have a problem with. And I think that's what she's talking about privately.
I do too. Yes.
You know, I don't think that.
And obviously there are issues with, at least as it stands right now, open trade.
Exactly.
Too. So,
I mean, if she's talking about open borders, like we're going to stop acting like it's possible to be an illegal person in America.
Right.
Then fine.
Yeah, I'm down.
Yeah, that's okay.
Yeah.
If we are going to talk about open borders, like, only companies owned by Mitt Romney and Donald Trump have access to these borders, and everyone else is stuck in their shitty country.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not into it.
Yeah.
I don't care.
Agreed.
She also talks about how Democrats and Republicans both need to be moderate.
We don't need
both of them if they're both moderate parties.
I know.
She's right in the middle.
I know.
She is a Democrat and a Republican. So we don't need either part. Like, now we just need radical parties.
Yeah.
Like, this eliminates, if we are literally a race between a moderate Republican and a moderate Democrat is a nothing race with nobody in it.
Right.
It's a race, you know, between, like, I can't even think, like, it's like running John Kerry for both sides. It's Mitt Romney and John Kerry running for office.
I was just about to say, on a lot of levels, we sort of just had that.
We just had that race, yeah.
I mean.
But, like, it's just, like, it's, like, indistinguishable people running for indistinguishable reasons on indistinguishable platforms.
Right.
We don't need it. She talked about her love of Simpson Bowles.
Right, which is the financial plan that Simpson and Bowles came up with.
So true.
Yes. But it talks about
restrained spending. And
right, exactly. It does talk about keeping revenues up. So, yeah. I mean, it's not, it was, there were a lot of people from both sides that thought that plan should have been, you know, taken or put into action, and it never happened. But it's a very moderate plan.
Yeah. It's just as she would like it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then she also complained that the State Department was technologically behind.
Yes, she said, quote, people were not even allowed to use mobile devices because of security issues.
Which is interesting, because she was using one.
Yikes.
So, don't want to have been caught saying that.
No.
Meanwhile, if all of that wasn't enough.
Boy.
We also had a VP debate this week. You guys, what a fucking snore fest.
I watched only what I could stomach of that, and it was minimal.
I listened to everything I didn't watch. I listened to the first 10 minutes, watched the rest of it. And I was going to go back and watch the first 10 minutes if it had been interesting.
No.
But all it did was make me want to punch everyone.
I know.
There was not a moment of that debate where I thought, thank God she chose Tim Kaine.
I know.
Tim Kaine came off as a fucking asshole.
Right.
And
I know. And
he's supposed to be the nice one.
I was going
to
say, he was supposed to help the likability factor. Yeah. And he was just like a douche the
entire
time.
And he's got her problem. I mean, I'm so pissed at them about this because her problem is she's lovely in person and she can't project it.
Yeah.
He has the same problem. I'm sure he's a nice guy in person.
Probably.
But he came off as a misogynistic prick who's a patronizing asshole on top of that. And so he too can't project his nice quality.
Yeah.
He's just a guy who behind the scenes people kind of like. And in front of the scenes can't make anyone think that he's a reasonable person. It was like two suburban dads arguing over a woman about nothing.
Oh, yeah. They had zero interest in listening to the debate moderator.
The debate moderator was both not giving them enough time to discuss because they were interrupting themselves. They were interrupting each other so much that no one got a word in edgewise. Yeah. All that Mike Pence did was lie about Donald Trump's record.
Right.
All that Tim Kaine did was remind him of quotes that Donald Trump had said.
Right.
And the moderator repeatedly tried to break in and neither of them listened to her.
And neither of them listened to her. I would say that I don't think that she did.
She didn't do a great job.
She couldn't help them. She couldn't help them talking over her. But I feel like she didn't go with the flow of the debate in the sense
that's true.
Like, you know, like they would be sort of like they would finally get to the point where they seemed like they were having a reasonable chat about taxes or something.
Right.
And then
she'd
be like now let's
on.
Talk about North Korea. And it was like, wait, what? Why? Like,
but
I,
it was
you
also
know, I
like
realize that's
it,
on your list of things to talk about, but like, let's go. Let's
they,
like,
they
let's
made
keep
it
doing this.
Impossible because they spent the first 20 minutes of every topic arguing over each other.
Right, and not talking about the topic.
And not talking
anyway.
About the topic.
Totally.
And Tim Kaine was just as responsible for that as Mike
Pence.
Totally,
he absolutely
The two
was.
Of them were I understand that Mike Pence was actually, like, lying about things, and that was frustrating Tim Kaine, and so he was interrupting. Like, I understand that only one of them was, like, flat out lying.
Yeah.
I also understand that I have always said that the actual content of a debate is meaningless and that performance is everything.
Yes,
and that
it is.
That is why I don't care if Hillary Clinton can name every person who's involved in ISIS.
Exactly.
I want to hear her say something inspirational about how she's going to fix this problem in Syria.
And do a great shimmy shake.
And do some shimmy shaking. Exactly. Like, I would contend that tonight, you know, there's nothing about any words that were said that was as meaningful as their sort of performance.
Yeah.
And that is what I feel like is the problem here. It's like Tim Kaine obviously did debate prep. He knew a lot of facts. Why was no one like, don't be an asshole?
Right. Because they told him that what
being
he should be doing is that he should be attacking Trump.
Yeah.
And so he took that quite literally.
Too literally.
Yeah.
But her choice of him remains to me one of the most frustrating and nagging problems with her
Well,
candidacy.
And I said to you at one point, because like at one point he talked about being a gun owner and lover of the Second Amendment. And I was like, listening to a debate between two Second Amendment lovers who are both also pro-life, by the way. I mean, Tim Kaine wants women to be able to choose, but
he supports the Hyde Amendment.
Right, exactly. So
he wants them to be able to choose if they're in a financial position to choose.
It was just like old, boring, white, Second Amendment
loving,
lovers, abortion hating. It was just sort of
assholes.
Like, what am I looking at now?
No.
Also, it really gave me, like, I shut that off and, like, thought to myself, why is this a thing? Like a vice presidential debate. Like, but seriously, though, I'm not asking as, like...
No, I mean, I think...
I'm asking as a very real question. Like, why do the vice presidential candidates actually have to debate?
I think that it is a valuable thing because they both could be the president.
They could be, but they're not talking about what they would do if they were the president.
Exactly.
They just only spend the entire time talking about sticking up for the people that are on the ticket
with them. The problem is that they have to people who are not in line with the platforms that they're representing, first of all, for this debate.
Yeah.
You know, I would say that with the Obama administration, I was really fucking glad they had a VP debate because he was a first-term senator who didn't actually offer any plans and was just being inspirational. And I wanted to hear that, you know, that the guy who was going to come in there with him was a guy right. who, like, knew some shit.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, I think that there is a sense that, like, you need to know that the VPs are... I think that it was important that Sarah Palin be on a debate stage because we needed to know that she was not a thinking person.
Right.
You know,
we needed to know that she did not know who the president's name was.
Exactly.
Or who the vice president's
name
was.
Yeah.
She kept calling him O'Biden.
O'Biden. I know, that was so great. but, like, we needed to know that Mike Pence is a lying asshole.
Sure.
We needed to know that Tim Kaine is not performing the... Like, we needed to know these things about him.
Because that was the other main takeaway, is that... Everything that Mike Pence said
was a lie.
Truly, everything that came out of his mouth was
and it,
not
it sort
correct.
Of seems like he knows less about Donald Trump than the average voter.
Well, he certainly didn't know anything about what Donald Trump has said in the past or just
or believes
to
or,
know it and then just figured that he could get away claiming that it wasn't true.
I think that's what it was.
I think that's what it was too.
Yeah. But in any case, that was a shit show.
It was.
And I never want to hear from either of those two ever again.
No, I know. God. Ugh.
It was the most unlikable debate between two unlikable people who were both brought in to charm the voters.
Right?
And it turned out the combination of them was a combustible combination where it turned out they were both asshats.
Gross.
Both and I, people walked away. There were people who were like super pro Hillary people on my Facebook wall who walked away being like, I finally am on board with the Tim Kaine thing. And I was like,
what?
I have
Why?
Never been less on board with Tim Kaine. And I have never wanted to say I told you so badly as
right?
I do right now.
I know.
If I could dump him off the ticket tomorrow.
I would.
I would do it.
Totally.
I mean, like that. He was that bad of a performer. In any case, that's the news. Unless you live in a hurricane region, in which case,
right.
or if you live in,
that's the news.
You guys donate money to Haiti. They got really and Cuba as well.
Baracoa you would have thought that this was like, if you were watching cable news this week, by the way, you would have thought that it was not Hurricane Matthew, but Apocalypse Matthew.
Yeah.
Because
like
I mean, it was like
Florida got evacuated.
It was like some serious end time shit going on. And I'm not trying to like downplay the effect of this because it was really terrible
was
in a lot of places. But it was like the coverage that was happening
was bonkers now.
Here was a little much, guys.
Yeah.
Like, check yourself.
Well, and if you want to do coverage that's like, here's what we could be doing for Haiti. Here's what we could be doing for Cuba. They both had cities and large swaths that got totally decimated.
Yeah.
Fine. I'm in. Do it. If you want to just tell me that all of Florida is leaving Florida, first of all, the rest of the country does not want them.
No, I know.
Keep Florida in Florida. That should be a motto that we adopt. And second of all, I want to know why, like what has it come to? What is happening with this hurricane that Floridians have never seen before?
Well, I know,
they
right?
They live in fucking Florida. There's hurricanes every year that are devastating there.
I know.
Like, because it passed through. It's been downgraded now. There was a lot of damage. Was it an amount of damage unforeseen?
No.
No, it was just like the amount of damage that a bad hurricane does.
Yeah.
Like,
which is,
we need to break out of.
Which is sad.
It's sad. Absolutely.
But
should
yes,
we be providing aid and, you
course.
Know, resources? Absolutely.
Yes.
Do I need 24-hour news coverage of it? Definitely not.
You don't.
Not this year.
Nope.
Not any year. Not during a presidential election, though.
No.
Like, I just need to know enough to know that there's something I can do to help if they need help, and
yep.
that, or that I can call my senator or call somebody to make sure that help arrives. Like,
yes.
that's what I need to know.
Yep. That's it.
In any case, that's the news this week.
Oh, buddy.
Thank you, Jill Stein, for being on our podcast. Thank you to everyone else who was on our podcast.
Yeah. We're going to have another special guest
next week,
too.
We're going to have a special guest next week.
Yeah.
We're getting into an exciting
It is,
era
guys.
Of the podcast.
That's right.
The next few weeks are going to be
stepping
pretty,
it up.
Pretty cool.
Stepping up our game.
That's right. Stepping up our game. We will talk to you next week.
Bye.
And we will be here covering every moment of the rest of this presidential campaign.
That's right.
We're not going to take another vacation, so don't worry.
Nope. We're here for you.
We're here for you. All right. We'll talk to you next week.
Bye.
Bye.